We've got you covered. CCFM is everywhere.
It is 10:15 right here on 107.5. As I mentioned earlier on, Graham is back.
It's business made simple with Bizval, exclusively on In Season.
Welcome back, Graham. How are you doing?
Great, thanks, Saki. It was good to be back. And after the rain of the last week or so, I mean, great, fantastic weather in Cape Town again. And delighted to be with a guest today. I think these sessions, when we interview remarkable business owners, are always great. I have to do less talking. I just have to ask questions. It's a lot easier for me.
Yeah. Listen, I do have to say that I do appreciate you when you have friends in studio, right? Not saying that I'm not enjoying you alone, but I love that you always have someone. And who are we talking to today?
Well, I'm delighted to be hosting Murray Clark. Murray's the founder of Neighbor Good. He's also an incredibly down-to-earth and humble entrepreneur who's got an amazing story to share. Mm-hmm. We really want to welcome Murray. And Murray, thanks for joining us here today.
Hello, everyone. It's awesome to be here. Thank you for having me. Super excited.
Well, Murray, to kick off, you know, I think some of the listeners might know who you are. But won't you give us a brief introduction? You know, firstly, who's Murray? And mm-hmm. secondly, for those of the listeners that don't know, who and what is Neighbor Good?
Oh, goodness. So my name is Murray, Murray Clark, and I am a dad to Harrison, who is 19 months old, a little boy who's the apple of our eye, and my beautiful wife, Kim, who... we live in Cape Town. We are converted Cape Townians all the way from Durban, and we've been here for 4 years, and it's been the best decision ever. We run a company called Neighbor Good, which is a collection of hotels, apartments, and workspaces across the city of Cape Town. Mm-hmm. And we are essentially creating an all-access passport to the city of Cape Town for the new generation of millennials, Gen Z, yeah. and people young at heart who are looking to live more transient lives, live more collaboratively, connect with one another, and hopefully in the process of doing that, bring lots of good to the world, which is in our name. And I'll share a little bit more about that as we go.
Awesome.
Well, Murray, I mean, if you say young at heart, I might just sneak in as a potential customer. Although I'm on the wrong side of 45, so maybe not.
Young at heart, good at heart, same thing.
So before we get into your story, I mean, maybe tell us a couple of things. Like, when did Neighborhood start? And the name Neighbor Good, you know, mm-hmm. would you mind just sharing, you know, how the name came about and what's the vision behind that?
So like all good entrepreneurial journeys, there is years and years of work, lots of ups, lots of downs, lots of victories, lots of setbacks, and everything in between. There's never just a perfect linear J-curve that one day you look up and you say, wow, we've succeeded. It's been fraught with challenge, and it's been fraught with victory, and it's been fraught with everything in between. But really, you know, where my entrepreneurial journey started was probably the first sprouts of really understanding that I was an entrepreneur, and it wasn't really cool at the time, was back at school, in high school, and maybe it was really a love for teams, and building teams, mm-hmm. and being on team sports. I've always valued the power of a team, and you know what a group of people in community with a common purpose can achieve versus just individuals.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's what business and that's what life is all about. It's about the sum of the parts, and you know, really chasing a common goal. And that's entrepreneurship at its core. It's not about just extracting, you know, maximum profit from any particular transaction or making as much money as possible. It's really, you know, a combination of all of these things, driven by a mission. And that mission really needs to be common for everyone, and it needs to be understandable. And so growing up in Durban, I had the good fortune of really having a beautiful relationship with my late dad in the latter part of, well, my whole life, but during high school, he was a bucky builder. So really like down-to-earth, gentle giant who, you know, as a dad, you know, now that I have Harrison, I can really understand that relationship a lot better. But you look up to him. And so for some people, it might be their dad. For other people, it might be their mom. It might be their uncle. It might be a friend. But my father was really that inspiration for me as a human. He wasn't a wealthy man necessarily. In fact, he had many ups and downs and successes and failures where we saw him lose money and we saw him do well. And it was never the sort of, again, clear linear path. And in fact, he probably struggled a lot more than he succeeded. But where he was successful, he was an incredible father to myself and my brother and my sister. So that was an inspiration to all of us. He had lots of problems himself, just his personal journey, as we all do. We all have these, you know, these things that we have to deal with. We're all emotional human beings. And so it's this constant, never-ending journey to try and chase progress and be better every day. But he's taught me the basics around property. And at its core, I'm really a real estate guy that has a love for the built environment and has taken sort of community first principles and applied them to our business in a way that combines, you know, the best of community and physical space combined with the best in real estate principles, and then built neighborhood off the back of that. For many years, I built entry-level residential in Durban and then progressed into sort of convenience retail. So we built 45 odd shopping centers across South Africa in townships like Kumbu in the Eastern Cape and Mthatha and Zululand. And so that's where I cut my teeth in the property space. Mm-hmm. But even back then, we were thinking about space slightly different. There was a purpose, and neighborhood now is a reflection of where we would like to see the built environment going. And really, it's a collection of spaces, both living, working spaces and experiences connected across a city, where when you become part of our community, you don't just have access to a workspace or a hotel room or an experience. You have access to thousands of people across the city, 20 to 30 buildings. So for one price, you have access to everything, whether you're living and working with us. It's not about just thinking about product within the four walls of physical space. And then there's this experience and community side of our business, which is just becoming the intangible, beautiful thing that makes it special, where there's something happening every day. So if it's like an entrepreneurship event, or if it's a group walk up Table Mountain, or if it's connecting for early morning runs, or if it's living life and living and working in the day and age that we live in now, is so much more than just this functional experience. We are searching for community. We're searching for all of these things. And that's the product that we want to create. So it's been a 3.5-year journey for us. And we have about 1,000 units across the city of Cape Town, across living and working.
Sure.
And a community of about 4,000 or 5,000 people that interact with the brand every day. And our mission is essentially, you know, to bring good to neighborhoods. That's how we think about the world. And so we're excited about what the future looks like and to chat more to this beautiful audience of good people themselves.
That's wonderful. I mean, I think it's about community, and it's about doing good and having not just a positive outlook, but actually bringing those people together in a safe, in an inspiring space. And, you know, a lot of the buildings, I guess, that you're involved with weren't always these beautiful buildings. It's amazing what, you know, a lick of paint and a bit of a refresh, and then bringing the humans into that space. Yeah. It's amazing what it can do to transform what is almost a dead space.
Yeah, you know? I think, you know, buildings on their own are really just bricks and mortar, you know. So there's nothing exciting about a building what's exciting about a building is when you can combine it with intangibles. You know, the intangibles mm. are the energy that people bring. It's the culture around the community that you're building. It's how it connects in the broader framework of an entire neighborhood or an entire city. It's all of these intangible things combined with, you know, a hospitality culture that we as NeighborGood integrate into the way we do things. Mm. And at the center of that is a series of values, which are super important for us. So kindness, warmth, empathy, like just treating people with love. And that's not just applicable to the way we run our business. And those hospitality principles should really be relevant to all business. I mean, I think I always say to my team, indirectly, it's a little bit selfish when you give when you walk into a room and you can give joy to someone and you can change the way they feel, the way they emotionally feel, depending on where you find them, because sometimes there might be a grumpy human in the room. But when you can help change their state of mind by just bringing the right sort of energy into the room and joy into the room in a professional setting, that joy, that changing their state helps change your state. So like indirectly, it's like the best possible thing, because when you can make other people happy, whether it's in business or personal, indirectly you're actually making yourself happy. So I think that's sort of something that I try and encourage across our team all the time. You know, we have a decision every day when we wake up. Do we bring good energy to the spaces that we live and work in, or do we, you know, do we bring a different sort of energy? And you know, you have to be exceptional readers of human emotion to be successful in life. And you have to meet human beings where they are at, not where you are at, to try and reverse engineer the best sort of solutions and to get the best from teams and from people. You really have to be, you know, understanding of human emotion, especially in the hospitality space, because and that's the business that we're building.
100%. I guess, you know, as you walked into the room, you know, you also carry that charisma with you. I just saw Saki's eyes light up when you came into the room. Maybe she thought we were doing a TV interview, and you know, I'm reserved for a radio interview, but you would have been the TV star.
I wore my best jacket today.
is the, what do you call it? Is the Zoom camera on? Aside. So Murray, you've spoken a bit about your dad, the background, your inspiration for NeighborGood, but you know, and that was part of the seed for entrepreneurship. I've heard some of your story before, but I mean, what was your sort of first entrepreneurial foray? You know, so you know, when did it start? And you know, as you said, you were always interested in teams and that, but share a little bit of that story, if you don't mind.
So I think, again, like my dad was that human that I looked up to, and because he was a builder, you know, he never wanted me to be a builder. He wanted me to go to university, and you know, he encouraged me to study law, which I did for about a year and a half until I dropped out. But I think naturally, because he was in that space, you know, when I was about 17 or 18, you know, you gravitate towards that sort of industry. And so he helped me a little bit in respect to sort of understanding the real estate space. He was at the end of his life, you know, buying a bachelor flat or two and doing it up, and there was nothing big, but sometimes the most basic things can also help. You know, when you buy a property for 500,000 rand, how much is it worth? Okay, it might be worth 650,000 rand if you spend 50,000 rand. And those were the basics he taught me. And naturally, I loved, you know, solving problems. And then, but we weren't a family that had a lot of money. So we were like super, like middle class, to the extent that we didn't have a lot of money to buy things. So I had to start looking for opportunities that didn't need capital. So we would find old buildings that we could lease, which we did. So our first building was an old cricket pavilion in Durban North, which was dilapidated, overlooking a field. And we rented that from the club committee for 3,000 rand a month. initially, I had the grand idea of opening an under 18 nightclub, which I did for the grand total of about a month until the moms who dropped off their daughters decided to close us down. So that was a very interesting experience, and I hired all my mates as bouncers, and there I was, this sort of 18-year-old kid running this under 18 nightclub and charging 50 rand at the door, or I think it was 20 rand at the time, and you know, counting the entrance fee at the end of the night and my old 1978 5,000 rand Mercedes-Benz that I bought for 5 grand on the side of the road. So that was like my first experience. And then because we got shut down, we had this building and I had this rental cost. And so I put an advert in the classifieds back then, and the classifieds were still, you know, papers that we would read at that point. And I found a gym that was relevant at the time called Curves, and a franchise in Durban North that wanted to use the building, and they ended up signing a lease agreement with us for 10,000 rand a month. So we rented it for 3 and we sublet it for 10, and that 7,000 rand difference was the first sort of profit we made in a normal property deal. And then the rest is history. You know, from there we progressed into other property deals, always with a very like lean mindset, because we didn't have capital. So whenever we had to structure a deal, we would have to convince people to either, when we were buying a piece of land to develop it, instead of paying a sum of money, we would have to convince the property owner to take a unit or two at the end of the development. So that would be our equity in the deal, which would essentially then suffice for the banks. You know,
but I think there's such a powerful lesson in that. You know, if you look at the parable of the, you know, the farmer who went away, and you know, it's not about how much you have, it's what you do with it. So even if you got a little and you put that to productive use, you know, and I think for entrepreneurs and people out there is don't think because you don't have a lot you can't get started. And I think there's a sort of conventional wisdom that you need lots of capital to start a business. You don't.
No, there's a will, there's a way, man.
There's a will, there's a way, exactly. You know, and you know, so getting back to, you know, the business, a couple of things, and I think there's a theme coming through here is from adversity and setbacks and failures, and that, you know, you've done stuff, you know, and even Neighborgood, I think if I remember correctly, you started that in the middle of COVID. You know, lockdowns, people can't go anywhere, and you open up a public living space, so to speak. You know, so wouldn't you mind just sharing, like, you know, starting a business in COVID? And then also just what have been one or two of the biggest challenges or pain points over the last few years?
Yeah. So I think timing is everything. And I think for us, what we realized in sort of a post-COVID world is that the search for community and the search for belonging was more apparent than ever before. So we wanted to build something that hadn't been seen before, and I think, you know, COVID indirectly gave us an opportunity as a generation to rethink about the value of life, and the value for us was building this product that was relevant in the world that we lived in and that spoke to community as a value, and interaction and kindness and love and warmth and all of these things that we try and bring into our business every day. And what happened was hotels shut down. So we had a relationship with a guy called Mark Edwards, who was the CEO of Tower Property Fund at the time, and they needed to solve for this problem because the hotel was empty. It was only 14 units, and there was a few other offices that were also empty, and we came to him with a solution, said, why don't we convert this hotel that is now empty and will probably be for the next 18 months into this really cool co-living space, and combine it with a beautiful workspace. One of the big tenants had moved out, and so there was this big empty space. And so over sort of a 12-month period, with a lot of faith from Mark, who you know, he was taking a risk with us, to be honest. He didn't know whether the concept worked or not. You know, for us, we are thankful for that initial chance. We worked hard, and we sent, you know, we put our best number ones on to get that deal over the line. But I think the biggest challenge is not even raising capital or finding money. It's actually just like the daily pressures that come with starting a new business. Like, the operational pressures that speak to a better guest experience. And like, mm-hmm. when you don't come from the hotel industry and the co-living industry, you've got to build these skill sets. So mm-hmm. I think it's just the day-to-day that we have to learn. And you have to do it without a team, because you don't have money to employ people.
Initially, at least.
We have to do it all ourselves. Yeah. You know, I mean, like everything from screwing in light bulbs to taking tenant calls mm-hmm. to doing the leasing to like, you know, like advertising, the three co-founders, Kim, Sinjin, myself, and obviously Kim is my partner in life as well. You know, we did absolutely everything. And so you're painting this picture to the market, which is this like mature company. And when you see it, see it from the outside, yeah. people think, wow, this is like this big hotel company. But actually, you're paddling underneath, and there's like three people who are like, under 35, you don't really know what the heck is happening, you know. So you're almost like, I wouldn't say fake it until you make it, but like you have to have a belief in yourself that one day you're going to come out on the other side better for it. And that took us about three years, you know. I think it took us 3 years to get to break even,
sure.
Which is a journey when you are a self-funded company.
Agreed.
And you're basically, you know, putting in your salary into fund operating costs every month. Sure. You have to have this like self-belief as an entrepreneur that is absolutely essential to success. And I would say that it is probably one of the biggest, outside of persistence, is just that like natural self-belief that in the face of challenge, that what you're building has value in the world. And even when people around you are saying it's not going to work, or why are you going to do this, you just have to have this like very steadfast belief in yourself. Yeah. And so I think that's been helpful. You know, I think it's not an unrealistic belief. It's just a very like quiet confidence in the face of adversity.
I mean, I guess that's the essence of faith at the end of the day, you know. I mean, and it's kind of believing despite not having the evidence necessary to back that up in many instances, you know. So
like I think it's a heart thing. So like people ask me, like, it's not a fact thing for me. So like when people ask me about my faith and if I'm why are you Christian, for me it's like in my heart. So like I don't need to read a 1,000-page essay in theology for me to have a belief that Christ is, you know, our savior. For me that comes naturally because it's a heart thing, and that's a God-given heart thing. And I think the same is for entrepreneurship and business. In the end, yes, there is this requirement for logic in the physical sense, and you need to take a calculated view on the world in the physical. But there's this in another world out there that we don't see, that is really what means, you know, our existence. And it's the same for entrepreneurship at the end.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I mean, there's just so many lessons to take out of that. You know, I mean, as you said, like how some of those cards fell, you know, starting a business out of COVID, people who've been isolated and locked down, obviously desperate to form a sense of community. I mean, we didn't talk about that, but a lot of your clientele or community are digital nomads, etc. You know, so, you know, younger people nowadays not wanting to wait until they're 65 to retire and travel the world, but wanting to experience the world. So, you know, out of that sort of adversity, you actually, the timing probably couldn't have been better, you know.
And
then,
excellent.
You know, the journey along there kind of making that happen. I mean, yeah, I had so many questions prepared, so maybe we're going to have to get you back for another slot. But I want to kind of maybe ask one last question, and you touched on a really important point there, you know, around, they say behind every great man, there's an even greater woman, you know. And you know, I know that Kim has been, you know, in addition to being an incredible mom supporter, she's been a co-founder of the business. And would you mind maybe just sharing, you know, in the last few minutes with our listeners, you know, the role that she's had in the journey and how important she's been as part of that journey?
Yeah, I'll go back to our wedding day where they talk about, you know, in roots growing underground as being the foundation of a relationship rather than what you see above the ground. And Kim and I have been together for almost 15 years now. And we have gone through life experiences together, and we have been through ups and downs and everything in between, like love, death, just everything. And I think that when you've got a partner in life like that, it's an unbreakable bond that I think through testing times you can just rely on, you know. And I think that's been the beautiful thing of our relationship, is that she's just this human being who I've been able to like trust and love and share vulnerably and like experience life in its truest sense. And on the other side of that, she's the most insanely talented, creative human being. Who is also insanely detailed.
And I've seen that, you know, like when she's doing a photo shoot, it could be out of could it be out of Vogue magazine.
I'm not like that as well. So like, I think we make a really, together with our other co-founder, Sinjin, who's also just an insanely talented human being, she's just been a source of inspiration for me. And I think when you are running a business or you're living life and there's meaning because your partner is your why and your son is your why and your mission is your why, it just becomes a whole lot more meaningful. So she's been beautiful. I don't think I would have done it, I don't think we would be here if it wasn't for, you know, the strength of our relationship. And you know that I'm thankful to my beautiful wife for.
That's incredible. I think maybe the next interview we'll get Kim in here.
she'll do a better job.
Yeah,
it's
incredible. So Murray, just to wrap up quickly, I mean, so literally in 30 seconds, you know, any sort of final thoughts or words of wisdom or encouragement to, you know, any budding entrepreneurs listening today, or you know, even just listeners, you know, I mean, you know.
I think entrepreneur or professional or family or wherever you find yourself today is just like that belief in yourself and your ability to back yourself in context of whatever situation you'll find yourself. I think we all come from different, you know, worlds. We all have had different life experiences, but I think God has all given us the ability and, you know, the gift of life, and he wants us to use it. And so I want you know, for anyone on my team, for anyone in this extended community, is just have that confidence in yourself that even in difficult times there are plans. And just make the decision every morning when you wake up to be better and to bring good to your world. Because really, you know, that sort of progress is an active decision. And we have to take it every morning, not once every few weeks, even when we're not feeling good. So bring that energy, bring that good to your world, and watch your world unfold, man. That's the gift that we've got.
I absolutely love that. You know, it's that intentionality, and as you say, it's every single day taking that
every single step
in faith and acknowledging it, and
even when things go wrong,
exactly.
The next day you wake up and you're consistent.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Murray, really, I mean, it's been an absolute, you know, Saki is just listening. Yeah, she hasn't had much to do today, but.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, you guys are awesome. Keep doing the good work that you're doing.
Thank you, Murray.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you both in studio. A powerful, profound segment for today. You know, I even forgot that we are talking about business, but thank you so much for being here. And of course, Graham will be back in 2 weeks' time.
It's Business Made Simple with Bizval, exclusively on In Season.